Hey, welcome back to Make More Music, the podcast that connects you to music and one another. My name's Chris. I'm a board-certified music therapist, and today I've got a great episode with W.B. Walker of the Old Soul Radio Show. Some other updates. I built a Fuzz Factory pedal. It's sick. You can check it out on Instagram at make.more.music. If you like that kind of stuff, the DIY stuff, I've got several projects coming, and I've did the guitar project and stuff like that. So definitely follow along. Give me some encouragement. Learn some things. Do your own things. Mess things up. Make more music, right? But W.B. Walker, y'all, if you don't like country music, you're about to be evangelized. He's been on this kind of crusade of making authentic country music accessible and was a pioneer of podcast radio, you know, 10 years ago now. And has just had great success. He talks about becoming friends with, you know, these artists and kind of being on the upswing of Tyler Childers and Colter Wall and some of my favorite artists right now. And but also we get into a lot of real deep stuff about mental health and addiction and alcoholism and what is country music? What does it mean? Why is it important? So y'all, this chat is great. He gave me a ton of his time. You're going to love it. I just apologize because, you know, he's from West Virginia and I'm from Kentucky and we both talk slow. So that's your disclaimer. Enjoy the chat with W.B. Walker of the Old Soul Radio Show. Season 3 of Make More Music is brought to you by 3 great sponsors. And I wanted to tell you about them real quick. So I built a guitar and it is awesome. I have a companion blog post in the show notes that tells you about building a parts caster from concept to creation. And it tells you about the 3 great sponsors I got to work with. First is Parts Caster Concierge. Gary offers a truly concierge experience from build constructions and consultations to unfinished bodies and wooden pedal enclosures, all the way to custom requests and fully custom builds. He offers traditional styles as well as unique, one-of-a-kind DIY experiences with guitars that wouldn't traditionally have a bolt-on neck with a parts caster style build. Second is Porter Pickups. Brian and his team have been winding pickups focused on finding you the right sound and winding with a purpose. Their 5-person shop offers consultation through their online pickup chooser form to help you get closer to the sounds you're looking for. They sound killer. They just launched an entry-level, affordable line called the Gatekeeper. So if you're looking for something to try for the first time, look them up. Our last sponsor is Gun Street Wiring Shop, where they create wiring harnesses for your guitar needs with simple, elegant instructions to help even the first-time solderer like myself get the sound they're looking for. He's not into promoting parts myths, mojo, and magic. He sells circuits, and their customer service is top-notch. From basic upgrades to wild enhancements, Gun Street has got what you need. As I said, all the links are in the show notes and you'll hear me blab about it more, but if you want more, look there. All right, back to the show. WB, well, hell, I'm glad you're here on Make More Music and I'm glad to go into your whole story. I think if somebody is not, or any country fans are already going to know who you are, but if somebody's not a country fan, I think we're going to convert them all in this chat. I do believe. So
I'll do my best.
Before we get into that, I think we'll have to apologize to the listeners because, you know, I always feel like I'm from Kentucky and I talk slow and I feel like you and me together might be a long one, but here we go. So before we get into your whole backstory, I got a few rapid fire icebreakers. You ready?
All right.
So I know you spin records, but whether it was spinning records or listening on your phone or something, what's the last track you've played?
The last thing I listened to, other than some submissions I got sent to me earlier, the last thing I probably listened to was I listened to Billy Joe Shaver's "Salt of the Earth." I spun it on vinyl there the night before last. I think I didn't.
Good.
Last thing I listened to, I believe.
I can't remember if it was high school or whenever that show came out, but I used to think him doing that intro on that Squidbilly show was so funny. That show was great. It was buck wild, but it was great. All right. You can take this as philosophically as you want to take it, or you can just be plain and simple about it. But if you were an instrument, what would you be?
I don't know. I'd probably be something that's out of tune. I'd say no. So it don't sound the best. I don't know. I like talking, so I'd probably be some type of microphone or something, some old-timey microphone or something like that, probably.
I like that. One of those old, like, RCA styles or something. That'd be good. I always joke that I have this I love all the instruments that other people find annoying. So I'm always into banjos and accordions and all the things that people make those jokes about how they're not in tune and stuff like that. So I feel you. You know, with everything that's been going on in your life, you know, we're still trucking along, still in the COVID twilight zone. What's something that's been inspiring you recently?
I've just been, honestly, every day I kind of get inspired by something. I just, I don't know, I was in Walmart the other day and heard some people talking about how they were buying some, I seen these people, they had a buggy, had a bunch of water and stuff in it, and they were, I guess, buying some stuff to take to like a shelter or something like that. And, you know, I love seeing stuff like that, you know, just people doing stuff to try to help others, you know, just no matter how or how small, how big, whatever, you know. I seen that the other day, and it just I walked up to them, told them I appreciate them, what they're doing, you know. And that was probably the last thing that I can remember that really kind of put a smile on my face and made me think about how blessed I am type deal.
Yeah, that's always good too. I like that those, when you see those things like that, and it's almost like, you know, you're not in a space where, I don't know how to say it, but, you know, like you said, you know, you're in Walmart, you could have easily just walked right past it. You know what I mean? And I think it's cool to, like, just want to say good on you and keep doing it. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. All right. I've always been the kind of person, you know, that I think that you're sometimes meant to see, like, you might be having a shitty day, something like that. And I think things kind of come across you for one reason or another. You may be trying to make you realize, you know, maybe, you know, you could have it a whole lot worse than you have it type deal type things. And, and you know, it kind of just got me thinking, you know, about there's people in here buying water for folks that don't have water and type deal, you know. And just made me, you don't really think about things like water, electricity, things like that. It's just kind of something you have until your power goes out or your water goes out or something like that. But there's some people can't afford to have water and power and stuff. So, you know, just it's something that I try to remind myself how blessed I am type deal.
And wake up to stuff around you. Huh? That's always good.
Yeah.
This can be, you know, something music related, but, you know, it can be something that you just feel like people need to know about, a pro tip or a life hack, something that makes your life easier that people need to know about.
You know, we're in a pandemic right now. Nobody's really getting to see much live music and shit. But if you want to get to see live music, start doing a radio show like me and get people to come over and you can record them. And there you go. That's a life hack.
There's your life hack. Yes. I love it. Your video show's been going great.
Yeah, they're doing good, but that's kind of my way of cheating the system. You can't go see shows. I bring them to me type of deal.
Bring the shows to you. Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm hopeful here in the near future. It looks like tides are hopefully starting to turn and people are getting vaccinated and all that good stuff. So
yeah, I got my first the first leg of my vaccine today, actually. Me and my wife both got it today.
Good, good. Opposite end of the spectrum, what's your go-to junk food?
Man, I like about everything. Here lately, my wife's grandma bought some. It's something I like about everything. I love butter pecan ice cream. I like it real good, and I like chips and salsa and stuff like that. But my wife's grandma, I was at her house the other day, and she had bought some of them Lay's poppables. It's almost like a 3D burrito, but it's like a chip that's kind of – and
they're bringing those back. You know that?
Yes,
I heard they're bringing those 3D burritos back.
Yeah. Those poppables, I've been eating them. I like salt and vinegar poppables. I've been wearing them out here lately. So
that's good.
I like about everything, man. I ain't too picky.
I feel you. They call me the garbage disposal in my house. I eat everything. My family brings leftovers over to my house.
Yeah, that's kind of how I am. They I got three boys, and they're all bad about, you know, you make them a plate of food and they eat about a quarter of it, you know, half of it. I hate throwing away food, so I'm usually the one trying to justify, you know, finish it for them. So that's kind of how I am half the time.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, lastly, I feel like this is going to be hard for you to narrow down, but maybe go with your gut or first thing that comes to mind is who's a person, a project, or an organization, somebody doing good stuff that you feel like deserves a shout out?
Shoot. Let me try to, there's so many.
We won't let it, don't other people feel bad because he left you out. He's got to pick one.
I'll tell you somebody that, over the past few years that, that since I've got to know them that really mean a lot to me, there's I'm a big fan of Chris Knight, and I was on Facebook one day and like in a Facebook group of Chris Knight, and this girl had posted a painting she'd done of the song "It Ain't Easy Being Me," and it was just kind of like a map of Kentucky, and it had like lyrics and stuff, but you know, it was just awesome how she'd done it, and I reached out to her about, you know, liking the print, and was asked her about buying one. She sent me one in the mail, just, you know, didn't know me from Adam. And we've got to be really good friends over the years, and she, they're just super good people. And I talk to them all the time. Kelly Brooking and Ed Brooking, they're some people I've talked about on my video show and stuff before. They're just really good people that I talk to about every day and stuff. And she does some amazing art. She has a Instagram. It's called Something About the Moon. I think it's SAT Creations, I think is what she is on Instagram. Just a really good person. She does a lot of, she does this stuff. It's like, have you ever seen like them rocks? Like, I think they call them like them little rocks people like put places and stuff.
And, oh, yeah, yeah. Like the memory stone type stuff.
She does stuff like that, but she'll put like song lyrics and stuff on it and like just put them in random places and hoping maybe somebody will pick it up, turn it over and see this lyric or something and maybe turn them on to an artist. She just does stuff like that all the time. Just in general, just a very sweet person, tries to help about everybody that she comes across and stuff. And she's somebody that since I've got to know her and her husband, Ed, Kelly and Ed are just great people, and they're two people that I'm really blessed to have got to know them through their music and everything.
Sounds whimsical. I just looked up her stuff right now.
Yeah she's very, love that. Very cool person.
Very cool. Well, before you became this, I don't even know what you call it, internet radio, pirate radio, whatever the word is, before you became this country music radio savior, from my perspective anyways, take me back to where, you know, how did it even get to the point where you thought, yeah, I'm going to try this out? So when you were young, what were some of your earliest musical memories?
Well, probably like some of the first stuff I remember, like probably because I was born in 85. So this would be probably like 87, 88. Some of the first stuff I remember is like just the stuff I heard on the radio at the time, like Bon Jovi and all that stuff. When I was a kid, you know, you heard it all the time on the radio, and I like that stuff a lot. It's something I don't really listen to anymore, but I remember when I was a kid, you know, I liked certain songs and things like that. But when it comes to stuff, it's probably like in my wheelhouse. My grandma was a really big Hank Sr. My mom's mom was a really big Hank Sr. fan and liked this classic country, and she always had a radio on in the house. I mean, it literally never got turned off. She had a radio in the kitchen and a radio in her bedroom. And they stayed on all the time. And the only time they went off was when the power went off. So there was always, and back when I was, you know, pretty young and stuff, I mean, you had a lot of that late 80s, early 90s stuff, which I still listen to a lot of it. I think a lot of great stuff come out then. But they've still played a lot of stuff, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s and stuff. So I've been listening to classic country and stuff pretty much my whole life. But growing up, I was a big fan of, remember, like, when I was probably first grade, stuff like that. I was a big fan of like MC Hammer. Just a lot of the stuff nice. Was kind of popular.
Yeah, the stuff that was going on. Yeah.
And I remember one CD that I guess it was a cassette back before CDs, where I had CDs anyway. One that I used to listen to all the time was, I was a big Shaquille O'Neal fan. So that rap album that he had, I had the cassette of it. I used to play it over and over. But like
that, and I watched, what was it? Shazam, is that the movie?
Yeah, or Wizard, or the genie. Yeah.
The genie. Yeah, I loved that.
Yeah, I remember on Sega Genesis they had it. I think it was called Shaq Fu, He had his own like fighting game. It's like a Mortal Kombat, but it had Shaq and on her stuff.
What an awesome person.
Yeah.
Like, he gets it. I love people that don't take themselves too seriously, and he is like the definition of that.
And he just seems like such a good dude too. I seen a video the other day that he was there's some, I guess, kind of like, you know, some kids that you could tell they probably didn't have a whole lot, and they would come in this Apple store every day to do like homework and stuff on because they didn't have a computer at home. And somebody reached out to him, and he went and he bought them computers and stuff like that. So I thought that was pretty cool of him. But I've, you know, at my teenage years, I listened to a lot of, I mean, I've listened to country my whole life and stuff, but like when I was a teenager, I was really, which I still listen to them all the time. I was real big in like Nirvana and all that stuff and things like that. But I mean, I listen to about everything. I mean, probably 90% of the records I'll spin out here is probably, you know, country or classic country. But if people went through my record collection, I mean, I have so much different stuff, you know, stuff pretty much that catalogs about my whole life, you know, from the time I was small to now. I love everything. If, no matter what genre it is, if somebody, you know, writes something that you can tell is real, you know, it means something, you know, I love somebody that, no matter what genre, I love somebody that can tell a good story and let you know, their perspective or a little bit about them and stuff. So I've listened to about everything, man. I ain't gonna lie to you.
So did you grow up, I don't know your background with this stuff either. Do you play any instruments, or did you try playing instruments or anything like that?
Oh, I tried to. When I was growing up and stuff, I thought my calling in life was to be a singer, and I can't carry a tune for nothing. I mean, I'm an okay karaoke singer, but I can't do that great with it. But I bought a guitar. I've owned a few guitars, and like I can pick a little bit, but I'm just not real coordinated with that. Like I can play different chords, but when it comes to the progression of moving, you know, from chord to chord, I just realized that kind of wasn't my forte, I guess you'd say. So I kind of give up on that. But I get people asking me all the time that question about, do I play anything? And for years, I've always said, you know, I can play a jukebox. And about a month ago, I actually bought an 045 jukebox. So I guess I'm not fibbing anymore, you know, when I say that. You know, I'm good at playing a jukebox.
All right, record slinging. I like it. So, well, that is interesting to me because you've had this deep connection, it sounds like, to music for a long time. Did you, as, you know, a young person and growing up, did you realize that you had a different relationship than like a lot of your peers to music? Because it definitely, you've got that bug, like that obsession that, you know, a lot of people that can't not do something with music, right? Yeah. That's how a lot of people feel.
Yeah, I realized that very early on because like I would like, you know, somebody, a lot of people can listen to a song and just be like, yeah, I like that song. It's a good song. But I'm the kind of person, especially now with like Wikipedia and stuff, I'm like, I dig deep into artists and stuff. And I mean, I fall down these rabbit holes sometimes. It takes me a while to climb out. But I've always been like that. You know, even before internet and stuff, you know, I'd buy all these magazines and I'd try to find out as much as I can about artists and musicians and stuff. So, yeah, it's always been kind of like, I've told people it's a blessing because it's led me to kind of do what I do. But it's also kind of like a curse because I'm telling you, I get, especially with buying records and stuff, you know, like I'm one of these people that if I see somebody post a Waylon record or something that I've never heard before, I'll buy it, you know.
It's an itch. Yeah, you got
to
have it.
Just can't wait to hear it. And I could easily probably like listen to it on Spotify and it'd probably be a whole lot cheaper and shit. But to me, that just, it kind of takes a lot of I think it's a special that, because I'm all the time trying to find new music. And some of it's like, quite naturally where I do what I do with the video show and the radio show, I find new music that's pretty much new music. But I also try to find new music that sometimes might be 50, 60 years old. You know, it's just an artist maybe I haven't heard or some, you know, a deep, like a record that I haven't heard. And I just, like I said, when I dive in, I'm the kind of person that I'm very passionate about no matter what I do. And so if I'm into something, man, I'm in 100%. I give it absolutely everything in me. And I've just, as you can imagine, I mean, I got records. I think I looked the other day, I looked about 1,500 records, and that's probably what I bought over the past 4 or 5 years. And that's my thing. I love just sitting around, just finding music that I've never heard before. And it just, it means so much to me to be able to do it.
Even that, I think, you know, as a music therapist, you know, there's a lot of people that talk, you may have even heard that, as a lot of people say, the average person's musical preferences start getting locked in from about 14 to 24. So I think even that's interesting. You as a person that's, you know, voraciously seeking out new music is, I still think novel compared, especially to the average person. Do you find that when you're talking to people or anything, when you're not like, you know, talking to someone, all the people that come to your show or listen and stuff, I'm sure are like-minded like that. But
yeah,
when you're at Walmart and somebody asks you what you do, what do you even explain? What is it that you tell them that you do with all this?
Well, I get a lot of people that will, like, especially around my area and stuff, there's a lot more people that's kind of finding out about what I do and stuff. And, you know, I try not to go super deep on them, you know. I just say,
well, yeah.
So I just kind
nerd of out on them.
Yeah. I'll say, well, I do a radio show. I try to play stuff that's kind of like traditional country music from artists that are still making traditional country music type deal. So that's usually what I tell people what I do. But, like, sometimes, you know, like I had an artist come down the other day, Sean Benfield. I recorded, he's from Beckley, West Virginia. He come down and done a video show with me. And Sean has, his record collection is, I mean, he could probably start four or five record stores with the records and shit he has. So being able to sit down and talk to somebody that I know is kind of like on the same, like
down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. It's just like me and him was going back and forth, and, like, you know, just we're all the time sending each other pictures of, you have this one, have you seen this one, and type deal. But yeah, it's, I'm kind of with everything, like, I think I have a kind of addictive personality when it comes to just anything in general. Like, if my kids are, like, into a certain, like, especially when my oldest boy, he's getting ready to turn 14, when he was smaller, and he would get into a certain toy line or something like that, and he would want to, you know, we would go to travel all over to different Walmarts or whatever, trying to find one figure or something that he wanted. And I've always been like that, you know. I try to, if I'm into something, or somebody that, you know, my family's into something, like, I love the kind of the hunt, the chase, finding stuff and things like that. So I've always kind of been like that. Like I said, when I'm into something, I'm like really into something, you know what I mean? So that's with my podcast, you know, there's so many, when I first started doing it, a lot of the people that was doing podcasts back then, there's very few people that still do podcasts. And I see so many, I have all these people that's reached out to me over the years about wanting to start doing podcasts or whatever. And I always help anybody that I can, give them advice and stuff. But I think a lot of people realize that it's a lot of times it's something that really takes time to get a following. It takes time to kind of get your name out there and stuff like that. So a lot of people kind of like give up and don't really kind of stick with it and stuff. But, you know, I started the first radio show I done was in June of 2012. So I've been doing
that is
for almost 9
internet years. That's like a million internet years.
Yeah, I'm 35, but sometimes I feel kind of like the elder statesman in the room when I talk to people because I've just been doing it for long, you know. And it's,
yeah,
nobody, or like I said, a lot of people that started doing it when I started, and people that's over the years I've seen start doing stuff, you know, most people, they don't last too long just because there's a lot to it, you know. There's a lot that goes into it that most people probably, like where you do stuff, you understand, but there's a lot of folks that just don't realize the hard work stuff that goes into putting stuff together. With, especially where I started this video show, my respect for people that do anything involved with video and stuff like that, it's just through the roof, because I've realized how hard that shit is, you know, and how,
I mean, it's the editing time alone.
Yeah, it's a different breed compared to just like doing the, like, I could do a podcast almost in my sleep type deal, where I've done so many of them.
Yeah.
But, like, which I'm getting better with the video and stuff. But, man, I didn't realize exactly what I was getting into when I decided to do it. But I just, at one point, I was like, man, this is going to be tough. But, you know, like I said, I don't give up doing stuff. You know, I just kept fiddling with it until I found a program I was comfortable with, until I found, you know, how I wanted to do it. And it's getting easier. Everyone's getting easier. And I'm sure a year from now, it'll be really second nature to me.
Well, so take me back to around, you know, that 2012 back then. What were you already like a podcast listener, or, you know, what kind of made you think I want to dive down into this? What was going on in your life that, cause this started as totally just a labor of love passion project, yeah, and it still is, right?
Yeah. When, well, it was kind of funny how I really didn't listen to podcasts, but I kept hearing the term and stuff like that. And I kind of started looking, like, you know, I'd Google like music podcasts. I mean, I would see that these shows were just, or these music podcasts were almost just like people, you know, playing radio DJ at home and just putting these shows together and stuff, you know. And I had listened to a few of them prior to me getting started. But really what kind of got me peaked was the first time I heard Chris Knight. It just absolutely blew me away. I was like, how in the hell is this dude not on the radio? And I didn't realize at the time, I didn't realize there's a whole other world outside of what you hear on the radio. Because growing up in, you know, Eastern Kentucky, Southwestern West Virginia, I mean, it ain't the Mecca really for stuff like that. Yeah. And growing up, you know, with it, you know, without internet and things like that, if you want to hear stuff on the radio, you listen to whatever stations you can pick up. But when I heard Chris Knight for the first time, I was like, man, I was like, if I'm blown away by this dude, I guarantee there's so many people that don't have a clue who he is. So that just kind of led me to, it kind of lit a fire. You know, I have to find a way to be able to help these musicians get their music out there. And people thought I was plumber too, I'm sure, you know, when I had mentioned wanting to do this stuff. People, I remember some people I worked with and stuff. It was like, yeah, buddy, that's kind of, yeah, I don't, whatever you want to do, but, you know, that's kind of, who's going to actually listen to you type deal. And it just kept, you know, just doing it over and over and over, you know, just kept, you know, through social media, through Instagram and stuff like that, you know, I would use hashtags and I would try to follow people that followed other podcasts or musicians that I liked and was hoping that they would follow me back, maybe see these shows I posted, and just, you know, hoping maybe just gradually through word of mouth of people sharing stuff, you know what I mean, that people would start getting turned on to what I do. And it, like you said, it's still a labor of love, but it just took time, you know. So it, back 2012, I heard Chris Knight. I'd done like 13 episodes, or I think 15 episodes over just on my website, and that wasn't on iTunes. It wasn't hosted on any podcast platforms. Just, you know, me uploading a MP3 file on my website and saying, click here to listen. Then I thought, well, you know, I want to try to take it up another step. So that's when I took, like, I considered my first 15 shows almost like demo shows. And after that, you know, I took probably about a 3 or 4 month break, kind of worked on my format a little bit before I, you know, I wanted to get better at it, more comfortable at it before I tried to put it on iTunes. And well, there wasn't many podcast formats or outlets at the time. You had iTunes and maybe Stitcher at the time, but there really wasn't all that many. So I worked up a couple shows, put them on iTunes, and that's kind of when, just gradually over time, that's when it started, you know, picking up a little bit. I'd play an artist on the show and they would share it and things like that, and just, you know, just over time, just, you know, just kind of repetitive over and over and over, it just kind of got to a point where, you know, people were starting to let me know they enjoy what I'm doing and stuff. So that's kind of like with anything, you know, it's kind of just time and repetition and just hard work and passion and putting a lot of time into it and stuff. Like when I first started doing the podcast in 2012, like where I live in Dingus, West Virginia, is about as rural as you can get. And when I first started doing the podcast, we had dial-up. There wasn't any internet other than dial-up. So I would work on the railroad. I would, at the hotel I'd stay at on the railroad, I would like spend, pretty much stay awake the whole time I should be getting sleep in between trains. And I'd be like finding all this music, download music, getting everything ready. So when I'd go home, I'd put a podcast together. Then I would go to McDonald's and get like a double cheeseburger or something to drink, use their free Wi-Fi, upload my shows. And that's what I'd done for probably about 2 years. And we eventually ended up getting internet or, you know, the internet we have now and stuff and things like that. But, you know, I believed in this music that really changed my life, and all these artists, you know, the Ray Wiley Hubbards, the Luceros, and and stuff like that, that, you know, these artists that just blew me away that I had no clue they existed. So I it's kind of like when you read a good book and you want like to hand it off to somebody immediately.
Yeah.
Hoping they get the same feeling that you get, you know, from that book or whatever. That's how I kind of feel about music. And when I hear something, like to this day, I still get goosebumps when I hear a certain artist or something for the first time, you know, and I know it's something special. You know, I'm immediately reaching out to people. Hey, you got to check this out. So, you know, through the podcast, that just kind of give me a way to do it. And, you know, I can record a show. And as soon as I upload it, there's folks all over the world that I'm hoping is getting a similar feeling to what I had from when I first heard this artist myself, you know. So it just, it's been, like you said, it's been a labor of love, and it still means the world to me. And I enjoy every second I get to do it.
So this little thing that went from hotel rooms to McDonald's, these kids don't know how easy they got it these days, do they? But so going from that, and, you know, I'm sure it felt like shouting into the void at the time. But now I think you've been riding this wave that I think a lot of people that desire authenticity in country music are really looking for, this, you know, whatever you want to call it, alt country, Americana, you know, whatever the left of center,
yeah,
to the CMAs, basically. And for me, that introduction was, you know, Jason Isbell and Sturgill Simpson, and kind of getting me into that. And what do you see, and how do you define country music? What distinguishes that from other genres? Because you know full well, the sound of country music has changed and evolved. So what still makes it country?
You know, to me, country music, it's, I mean, it doesn't have to always be serious. I mean, there's a lot of great songs. I mean, like, one that comes to my mind is like Buck Owens, you know, Tiger by the Tail. I mean, there's so many, like, happy, feel-good songs in country music.
I love so much Buck Owens, yeah. So much. But that's stuff, like, one of the reasons I started Pedal Steel was Ralph Mooney, so. Yeah.
But the stuff, like, with me, like, you know, the stuff that I always kind of gravitate to is, you know, I guess the story aspect of things, you know, how somebody can take a 3 or 4 minute song, you know, maybe sometimes a little bit longer or whatever, and sit there and tell you a story and make you envision something, make you see something, make you feel something. And to me, that's what country music is, because, you know, country music, you know, like you listen to, you know, just throughout the years and stuff, you know, from Jimmy Rogers on, a lot of it, you know, it's about, not always, but a lot of it's got a lot of tragedy, a lot of heartbreak, you know, especially the stuff that come out around the Depression and things like that. A lot of the country and a lot of the blues and stuff, you know, these people were telling stories about their struggles or strifes or things they're going through, things like that. So to me, you know, I think like the big problem with, which I honestly don't listen to any of it, and I couldn't tell you, if somebody asked me about a particular song, I wouldn't know. Because I'm a firm believer, you know, that I don't want to waste any time listening to anything that why waste time listening to something you know you ain't going to like when there's so much good stuff out there that need ears and stuff type deal. But it just, with me, I mean, just the stuff that I listen to that really just stands out to me is just the story aspect of things, you know, the stuff that really just can make you think, make you feel something. I just think, you know, country music is just, it's all about the honesty, the sincerity, the just being genuine, not trying to conform or be anything that you're not type deal. And just like I can sit and listen to, like, you know, there's a lot of different rap albums that I can sit and listen to and get the same feelings and stuff from, because a lot of times they're talking about, you know, just telling stories about, you know, their life and stuff, and you know that what they're rapping about, singing about or whatever is stories that they've lived. You know, I can tell in somebody's voice of sincerity if it's something that they've wrote themselves or been through themselves. I can just feel that. And with country music, you know, nowadays and stuff, it's just all about trying to, there's just, nobody's worried about the sincerity or the genuine feeling of it. They're just worried about trying to write a hit or trying to, you know, to get streams or downloads or, you know, or whatever. That's all they're concerned about. And I've always gravitated towards the stuff that I can just feel is, like I always say, you know, the 3 R's for me is, you know, is stuff that's, you know, well, the I guess the two R's. I've always talked about stuff that's that if it's raw and it's real, and that just I can pick up on when people are singing something that they've lived through or something that they've experienced themselves. So that's the stuff that I really like. I miss the, you could hear Hank Williams sing a song and you know that he's, that you know that that man has, he's lived everything that he's sang, you know. Mm-hmm. And just, I get the same feeling with, like, you know, the just a lot of the newer, or the, a lot of the musicians that I feature on my show, I get that same feeling from them. But, you know, what they're telling you is from the heart type deal. And I just think with a lot of country music over the years, it's kind of kept dwindling away to, well, if they're just worried about the a song anymore. They're not really worried about how it's received or how it's, they're worried about just making money off of everything. And I think they lost that whole, because country music's always been something, you know, like I said, it's always had a lot of struggle and strife and stuff in it. And you could tell it's just general and just kind of like, you know, just down to earth working man type music. And people felt that and they connected with it. And I just don't think that most country music nowadays folks can really connect with anymore.
Hmm. Mm. And not if they're craving that authenticity. And I think it's, like you said, it's not one genre. We see that across genres. We see that across, and I think it's what everybody's been watching for a long time. It's the music industry kind of collapsing from the inside out. And yeah. I had a buddy ask me, he wanted me to bring that up to you. He said, how do you think streaming platforms are helping and hurting musicians? And he specifically was talking about your run in with, you know, you even having to pull down episodes and dealing with that headache. I was like stressed for you and I had nothing to do with it listening to those updates and things like that. So what are kind of your thoughts? You obviously are a vinyl collector. You obviously are really invested in the, you know, do it yourself musician, these guys that are in, you know, these people that are coming up on their own. So how do you feel about that aspect of trying to seek streams and how that's affecting the music industry?
Well, I mean, I've talked to a lot of musicians and stuff about it. And a lot of musicians kind of just had to conform to it and be like, well, this is kind of how things are. So, you know, they kind of have to accept that. But, you know, one thing that I do on every single episode of the video show, of the podcast, whatever, I always stress, you know, I always say, I said, look, you know, if you're paying the $10 a month or whatever for Spotify, and that's the only way that you can listen to music because you can't afford to go out and buy every single record that comes out and stuff, I said, wholeheartedly, I understand that completely. But if somebody's in a situation where they can buy music, you know, I would love to see people buy music because, you know, it's going to get to a point. I mean, now vinyl has resurged and all that stuff, but, you know, that's not going to last forever. I mean, I hope it does, but I mean, like with a lot of things, I mean, things get big again and they go away, then they come back and they go away. But just like, you know, if you buy a CD or you buy, you know, or you have a vinyl record, or even if you, like, you know, buy it digitally, you have this music, you know, stored on your computer, or you have these CDs, or you have something to hold on to. But, you know, these streaming services, I mean, you don't have nothing with that. Yeah, you can listen to it and stuff like that, but, I mean, these people are making nothing. Now, if you take somebody like Tyler or Colter or Isabel or somebody like that, yeah, they're making enough off Spotify and I'm sure off Apple Music and stuff to probably make a pretty good living. You know, but you take somebody that's trying to find their footing or try to, you know, to maybe not have to work a 9-to-5 job or have to work, you know, or whatever job they have, that wants to be able to do music as a full-time job and to be able to pour that, you know, to be able to focus completely on putting music out there and doing stuff like that. It's not so easy anymore because especially with all the COVID shit, you know, these people was making a pretty good living, you know, touring, but once that went away, they realized real quick, you know, yeah, this streaming stuff kind of sucks because, you know, we're not hardly nothing off of it. And that's why I think over the past year, you've seen more people release different releases and stuff like that. Like, you know, you've seen Sturgill put out two records kind of back to back with the whole, you know, the cutting grass stuff. And Tyler kind of put that surprise record out. And that stuff you didn't used to see a whole lot of. And I'm sure it's because they're not getting to tour a whole lot. But you know, if they're doing things like that for a smaller musician, you know, I know people that's had to go back that hasn't worked in 4 or 5 years, that's been on the road doing stuff, that's having to go try to find regular jobs. And a lot of times it's one of them things, you know, once they kind of get back in that swing of things as well, I have this this income coming in, something I can rely on every 2 weeks, every 1 week or whatever. Sometimes it's hard to go back to when things even get back to normal. It's not be hard for them to take that leap back because they're just scared that, you know, things ain't going to work out the way they was. So, I mean, streaming and stuff, you know, I know I kind of ramble sometimes to get off subject, but.
You're all good. That's what a podcast is for, right?
With streaming, I mean, I understand I understand it's cool. You can spend $10 a month and pretty much listen to anything you want to listen to, whatever. But, you know, I'm not dogging anybody doing that. I don't have any streaming stuff, and it's not because, you know, or I don't think bad of anybody for having anything. It's not like that. It's just, you know, I like to listen to music maybe a little bit differently than other people do. But I hope that if folks really find something they really like, and they can, you know, that they go out and try to buy this music and at least, you know, try to help these artists out, you know, in some small way, because it just, especially, I mean, things are kind of every day I'm seeing more shows and festivals and stuff posted, but, you know, it's, for the past year, folks ain't been able to do jack shit. So it's been tough on them. And I feel like sometimes I'm beating the dead horse type deal just because I talk about it so often on a show. But, you know, I really stress if folks can, you know, try to buy music and stuff, because, you know, like I said, somebody like Colter Tyler, they do pretty good, I'm sure, of what they make off Spotify and things like that. But you're just, you know, just your musicians that doesn't have them followings and stuff yet, you know, they just, they don't make enough off that shit really to do much of nothing with, you know.
Well, you also brought up Colter and Tyler, and I think you mentioned that. I loved watching your video episode with him. And I was just like, it was just so cool watching two bros basically sit there and cut up and have some great tunes. And I'm wondering, you know, obviously those are two huge, not just cool things that have happened coming to the show, but clearly relationships that have been built. So I want to know, through, you've had all these awesome kind of like anniversary shows and different things like that. Take me through some of your highlight reels of things, because I'm sure it blows your mind all the time as a music fan like yourself, that like I'm sitting here with this guy who has now achieved this success and we're just buddies and all these things. So take me through some of your highlight reels. What's been some of the mind-blowing things for you?
I mean, especially, I mean, quite naturally, you know, Colter, because when Colter asked me to be on his record, it was because a good friend of mine, musician that I've played on my show quite a bit, he actually, you know, he's one of my best friends, Justin Payne. He put out like a little self-produced record back in 2014 called No Place Lower Than High. And me and him done like
this stuff's good too.
Yeah. We done like a little skit on there, kind of like just being goofy and stuff. And like we was just being goofy. And when Justin first met Colter for the first time, I think Justin gave Colter a CD, and Colter heard the little banner between me and Justin on there. So he asked me, he said, when I put my first full-length record out, he said, I want you to be on there. I was like, okay. And I was honored by that. But then, you know, when things started kind of coming in the picture that Dave Cobb was going to be producing it and stuff like that, I was kind of in the back of my mind, I was like, well, you know, I don't see it happening just because of fact.
Yeah, like surely it won't. Yeah, yeah.
You know, when it come time, you know, once he got the record pretty much done, he's like, hey, I need you to do your part. And I was like, okay. So I sat down and done it. And, you know, getting to as much as I love vinyl and stuff, to know that, you know, I have a few different copies of a record that I'm on. And, like, I can go to pretty much any bar that has, like, a Touch Tunes jukebox and type in Colter Wall, and WB Talking will come up. So, you know, my little track on that record, you know, if folks, I don't recommend them to do it, but if folks wanted to listen to it on a jukebox, you know, it's on a freaking jukebox type deal. Just stuff like that just blew me away, because I always, growing up, I wanted to be a musician so bad I couldn't stand it. And even though I'm not, you know, I still have got to do some kind of cool stuff that's kind of, you know, that a lot of folks that I know that are musicians haven't got to do. So it's just kind of crazy, you know, sometimes when I actually think about it. But I mean, just, I mean, there's so many things that I've got to do over the years and things that's meant so much to me. I mean, just like getting to see, like the first time I seen Tyler live, it was like in a coffee house with like 10 people there. And after the show, you know, I'd talked to him a few weeks before that because I'd played him on the podcast and he was playing a show like 15, 20 minutes from my house. So, you know, getting to see a lot of that stuff early on, because I knew with everything in me that he was going to blow up. And I knew that, you know, as soon as folks started realizing who he was, they wouldn't be able to get enough of it type deal. And to have him stay, you know, here at the house with me and stuff like that. And like my 1 year anniversary, he played my 1 year show, my 2 year show, my 3 year show, my 4 year show. Stuff like that, you know, just always meant so much to me. And like with Colder, you know, the first time that Colder played the Ryman, he invited me to go Ryman. So I actually got to stand on the stage at the Ryman on the back of the stage and watch him play. And, you know, like I talked on the video show, you know, the first time he played the Ryman, you know, to me, it's a mecca of country music.
Yeah. That's a religious experience for sure. Yeah.
Not the home of the Grand Ole Opry anymore, but I mean, that shit don't matter to me. I mean, it's just, you know, to know that Hank and all these people played on that stage and me standing on the back of the same stage, you know, watching Colder play. And like I said, talking about that on the video show, the first time he played the Ryman, he included me. The first time that he put a vinyl record out, you know, he had me be on it. The first time that he played Austin City Limits, you know, he done a song for me on there. And things like that, you know, just things that sometimes it just blows my mind that they happen. But it's something that I'll never, I think, not look at it that way. You know, like I think of this stuff sometimes and I'm like, man, it blows me away. You know, like I'm winning like the Ameripolitan Award for DJ of the Year. I was the first podcaster ever nominated. And I thought, you know, they were just kind of doing that to shine a light a little bit, like throw a bone to podcasters or whatever. And when I actually won the award, I mean, that blew my mind and stuff. And just, I've got to do so many cool things and experience so many cool things and stuff like that. But I can honestly say nothing ever gets old to me, or I don't ever get comfortable with stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I always just try my best to to really cherish every single thing I get to do, because it's just, you know, I'm just beyond blessed to be able to have met some of the people and develop some of the friendships. And I mean, that stuff really means more to me than anything, is the friendships, you know, to be able to talk to some of these people. Like after I interviewed Billy Joe Shaver a few years back, me and him after that would talk on the phone pretty regular and text him back and forth and stuff.
And you're like, what in the world? I'm talking to Billy Joe Shaver.
When I interviewed him, I mean, I don't know what it was about me that really stuck out to him. But when I interviewed him, he's like, well, we're friends now. He said, just call me anytime. So I was sitting around drinking one night and called him up, talked to him for, you know, like an hour and a half. And where, you know, I just didn't call him when I was drunk. You know, I would just, you know, I'd have him on my mind and call and say, what are you doing, Billy Joe? And he'd talk to me and tell me about his day and this and that. And when my dad passed away, I don't even know how he found out about it. But when my dad passed away, he called and left me a voicemail, you know, and he said, you know, mm-hmm. he gave me a couple songs that of his. He said, you know, these are songs that I wrote about, you know, losing my boy. And he said, so maybe, he said, they might help you with going through losing your dad. And just so, like, quite naturally, when Billy Joe Shaver passed away, that really killed me. But, you know, just getting to be friends with some of these people that, you know, I consider heroes and stuff like that, you know, mm-hmm. just know that you must be doing something somewhat right for these folks to you know, to think of you the way they do and stuff like that. So just, you know, I just try to I'm just thankful for everything I've got to do type deal, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, I've kind of had some of these different experiences as well. And I think it's funny, like you said, I mean, people craving authenticity and connection, it goes both ways. And I think that's the thing that, you know, you've had a lot of glimpses into, is like, these are artists, but they're just people. Yeah. They're grinding too, and they're doing their thing too. And
That's one thing, you know, I've met a lot of people, and I've never been somebody that, when I meet folks that I know is pretty famous and stuff, I've just never been somebody that, like, I don't like freak out about it, you know. I mean, because I know that they're no different than I am when it boils down to it. They just, you know, mm-hmm. have talent or something that's given them opportunity to put something out there that folks want to listen to, or folks want to see, or whatever. But I've always, I've met so many cool people and stuff like that, and I try to always think about, they ain't no different than you type deal, and I'll try to treat people. And that's one thing I can say. I always try to treat folks the way I want folks to treat me. And so far, it's been pretty good to me,
Well, ever since I've started listening to you, I think one thing that has attributed to all of this success of your shows and your platforms is your authenticity. And for me, growing up in Kentucky, and honestly, I had this thing when I started this podcast, I started editing the show and realizing, like, dude, you talk really slow. It was like the first time I started realizing, like, oh, wait, not only do you talk slow, I've realized, like, I'm just slow. I move at that Kentucky pace. And I'm from Lexington. I'm not from a rural part of Kentucky at all. And I just realized, like, yeah. But what I'm saying is, hearing your show, hearing you talk and take your time, and not only that, then getting this picture of your authenticity. So ever since I started listening, you've talked about your struggles with mental health. You've talked about some of your just general health issues, talked about sobriety. You've talked about your own salvation and your conversion into Christianity. So a lot of that has happened in somewhat recent memory. So what has that kind of road looked like for you? And what has been kind of the role of this platform and the show in transforming your life, basically?
I always try to be, if I was to do a podcast or something like that, then if I had something else on my mind and I acted like I didn't have nothing on my mind type deal, I think it would come off. People could tell that something was off, or I didn't sound like I normally do type deal, or things like that. And, I think that's something that a lot of folks, I grew up, I don't want to say like my family was hard asses type deal, but, I kind of grew up, especially this part of the country, especially if you're going through something like with, you're upset about something, it's kind of always, just toughen up a little bit, it'd be all right type deal.
Suck it up. Yeah, suck it up.
Yeah, we've all been through it, blah, blah, blah. And, and as a kid, you're like, okay. But I've realized as an adult, sometimes when you go through certain things, if you're going through something, there's a good chance that other people are going through stuff that's similar. So, when I have talked about, things, because I got in a pretty nasty car wreck at work back in August of 2019, and I've had to have surgery on my neck, and I'm probably going to have surgery on my back pretty soon. And I've just had a really hard time, but just not on the physical side of things, but like, I was involved in a car crash, and I was in a minivan, and we was T-boned by a bus. And I thought that I was getting killed. Last thing I remember is looking out the driver's window. I was sitting up front in the passenger seat, and I looked out the driver's window and seen this bus coming at me. And I just kind of like closed my eyes and held on type deal and thought, here, this is it. And, it's something that to this day, I see a psychologist, every 3 weeks or so, and it helps having somebody to talk to and things like that, that's trained in helping folks, overcome things like that and just kind of deal with things like that. And, I was thinking, one day I was like, if I'm going through stuff like that, I'm sure other people are. So, a lot of times, if you talk about things, it might make somebody else feel better about the situations they're going in, knowing they're not alone and, things like that. And, I've just always tried to be honest with people. If I have something going on in my life that, and it helps me talking about it too, I've had a lot of folks reach out to me about things they went through traumatically and just things like that. And I can honestly say, if anybody emails me, as time goes on, I get more and more stuff. And like usually the first hour and a half, 2 hours of my day is just answering messages, emails and stuff like that. And I ain't trying to make myself sound like I'm somebody, but I mean, that's just the truth. I get a lot of messages and probably 80% of the time it's people submitting music to me, but I always listen to everything that I get submitted. And I always answer every, if somebody asks me a question, usually on a social media post or sends me a message on social media or an email or whatever. If somebody asks me a question about something they want to know about the show or if they want to tell me about stuff they're going on in their life, I try to always, to reach back to people. And I think that folks can kind of, they pick up on stuff like that, you know, that somebody takes the time to talk to them and stuff like that. Because, you know, I've messaged different people about things over the years. And when somebody don't respond to you and stuff, sometimes it makes you feel even worse than you felt before, you know, and think that type deals. Yeah. I always try to do what I can to, if anybody ever wants to talk to me or anything like that, usually on every show, I give my email and stuff out, and I have a lot of people reach out to me and stuff. And I just, you know, I talk about things that I've went through and stuff like that. Like I said, hoping that if somebody else goes through the same situation and thinks, well, if WB's going through this and he's, you know, seeing a doctor about it, you know, or trying to get help mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, maybe that's something I should do. And I'm not trying mm-hmm. to be like a role model or nothing like that. I'm just trying to let people know that sometimes, you know, that things are tough to deal with on your own type deal. And, you know, there's folks out there that can help you and things like that. So I don't know. I've always tried to be honest with people and things like that. And it's, you know, I think that folks have generally kind of appreciated that and things like that. So I just try to be honest with folks.
Yeah. I think, to me, you know, I worked at, you know, University of Kentucky Hospital, and I've worked at some other hospitals and stuff like that. So what I think is so special about that too is knowing the health disparities, just going straight up the Appalachian Trail, is it's one of those things that it's not talked about. And I think other than, you know, suburban America, you know, white class Americans, basically all other populations, including Appalachia and things like that, are, you know, don't feel comfortable addressing these things, because exactly like what you said, it's that, you know, we got to kind of just deal with it. We got to suck it up. We got to do our thing. So I just commend you, even as, you know, someone that is hopefully reaching some people that wouldn't hear it otherwise.
Yeah.
So from that perspective.
Well, a buddy of mine told me something one time that really stuck out in my mind. He said, you know, he said, you can take, you know, let's take 10 men that was over, you know, in Vietnam or over in Iraq or Afghanistan or something like that, that has seen some really bad, you know, let's say 10 of them get to come back home. You might have two or three of them that, you know, that start doing lectures and things like that to help other folks. You know, then you might have other ones that just, you know, just kind of deal with it. Then you might have a handful of other ones that can't get, they've seen and blow the brains out type deal. I mean, everybody's different. And I think you know, it's just from a mindset in this area, I mean, I think things are getting better. But like you said, growing up, you know, in Appalachia and stuff like that, you know, folks will, you know, that's always the thing. Well, just suck it up type deal, you know, just figure it out. And that don't always work for everybody. Everybody's different type deal, you know. And, you know, like that's kind of what I was getting at about, you know, the kind of analogy about, you know, people coming back from war. There's some people that they live a normal life. It don't bother them. But there's other people that can't deal with the things they've went through, things like that. So, you know, I try to, by talking about stuff that I've been through, if it helps one person and says, you know what, you know, maybe I do need to try to get some help. You know, I can't do this on my own type deal. You know, if one person gets, it's just like with music. If I play a show and one person gets turned on to an artist, then I've done my job. You know,
great.
If more people than that, you know, do it, then that's just a bonus. But, you know, like when it comes to things that I'm going through, I try to be honest with people. And if it helps folks, you know, that's kind of what I hopeful that it might help people and make them, you know, realize that they're not alone type deal. The one thing you did kind of mention, I was going to touch on a little bit, you know, you talked about.
Yeah, let's go into it. Roll into it.
You talked about like my sobriety and stuff. You know, like I said earlier, you know, with about anything I do, I've always kind of give it like my all. And like I said, sometimes that's a blessing, sometimes that's a curse. And, you know, when it comes to drinking and stuff, you know, I was always the kind of person that I was usually the one that everybody else kind of tapped out before I did type deal. And it got to a point where, you know, I realized, you know, especially after my accident and stuff where I, you know, wasn't working and things, you know, I just got to a point where I was like, you know, I'm not enjoying this anymore. I don't like kind of the person that I don't like being drunk all the time. I don't like, you know, just doing this anymore. And it was on think it was on January 3rd. It was a Friday of 2020 last year. It was on Friday. I had drunk probably a 12 pack of beer or something like that, and had another 12 pack of beer that I went to get and opened it up, grabbed a beer, set it beside of me. And just like, for whatever reason, like time just kind of kept skipping forward almost. Like I had that beer sitting there, but I didn't open it. And this went on two or three times, you know, just for a couple hours, you know, I just kept getting the beer out, but I never would open it up. And I got up the next morning and I didn't have the want to be drunk anymore. And I didn't want to do that anymore. So that's when, and it was all because, you know, the Lord saved me. That wasn't just, you know, me, you know, some people might think I'm crazy for saying that, but I mean, that's just, I didn't do that on my own type deal. And after that, I went about 6 months without almost listening to any music at all. I didn't hardly do anything. I didn't do any podcasts. I didn't talk to a lot of people. And it wasn't that I was just trying to just be rude to anybody, but I was afraid that a lot of stuff I associated with drinking would kind of send me like back down that downward spiral. And then when John Prime passed away, and just being almost a year ago that he passed away,
it was a year ago
when Prime passed away, that really bothered me. And I come out here and I said I hadn't been out here in my bar in like over 4 months at this point. And I come outside and I sit down and listen to a couple of John Prime's records, and I just told myself, I thought, you know what, there's a time in your life when you could sit and listen, when you was a kid, teenager and stuff. There's a time that you would sit and enjoy music and not have to be drunk or not have to drink, you know. So I just kind of, it took me a while to find that place again. And, you know, now, you know, doing video shows and stuff like that, you know, I just, if I do want a beer now, like, I know there's some people might think I'm crazy for doing this, but if I want a beer now, what I do is I'll get like a non-alcoholic beer and pour a little bit of a regular beer in it. And it just, to me, it tastes better than just a regular non-alcoholic beer, but I can sit and drink on them. I don't get a buzz. I don't get drunk. I don't get nothing. And, I like the taste of it. And, that's kind of what I've done to when I have wanted a beer and stuff like that. But it, I always thought that, you know, that folks wouldn't, I don't know. I thought, you know, there's a lot of folks that always kindly, disassociated me with drinking. So I thought, you know, maybe I won't be that fun no more. A lot of folks won't be around me no more.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, I've realized that, you know, that wasn't why folks wanted to be around me, and that wasn't, you know, that was just part of it. And, you know, I enjoy music now more than I probably ever have in my life. And it just, you know, it took me a while to get to that point or find that place, but it, I'm glad it happened when it did, because it was, you know, long overdue, but it, it was a tough process. You know, it was a long drawn out process to kind of getting where I am now, but it don't bother me now being around people drinking and stuff like that. It don't bother me at all. And that was something that kind of scared me. I didn't know how I'd be when I'd be around people. It was kind of getting on a good one or whatever, but it don't bother me.
And the pandemic going on, that's a lot of anxiety. Yeah.
It was kind of like a real kind of time to draw all that stuff to happen. Cause just being depressed and can't go nowhere, can't do nothing. And you know, it's sitting at home and not drinking at all and not coming out here to my building or my bar or nothing at all. And it's one of them things that it just, I'm glad it happened when it did, but it's just, you know, looking back, it really was tough to kind of get myself lined out. But like I said, I didn't do it on my own. You know, the Lord's the one that made that come to be when it did. And it, my relationship with my wife is 100 times better. You know, I'm sure that I'm spending more time with my kids and things like that. And cause I mean, I was at the point, you know, I'd stay up half the night drinking, and I'd get up the next day and I would think about, you know, when am I going to start drinking today? And it just, that's no way to be. And it, I'm glad that I was, you know, with the Lord, you know, that I was able to overcome all that stuff. So it, like I said, like you said, when we started out, it's been pretty big changes in my life over the past year or so.
Man, that's super powerful. You got me over here with goosebumps. I mean, anybody that's struggling with anything like that now, I think to me, the part that you got me really good was, am I going to be the fun guy still?
Am I going to be able to do those things? And then not only that, but like, and can I deal with it? Can I be around my friends and can I listen to this music? And I think it's so sweet to hear about that, like reconnection. My buddy asked me if I'd bring up John Prine for you. So that's funny. You brought it up without me even asking. So, yeah. But wow, man, that's a great testimony. And just shows the bizarre ways that, you know, if somebody doesn't like it, they can turn it off, but shows the bizarre ways that, you know, God and Jesus works, man. That is amazing to hear. So I don't know. Is there any other things we've left on the table? What should we get at?
Is there any other questions that your buddies had sent you that,
Well, we kind of hit at it, but let's wrap it up just to tickle them pink a little bit. So I had them both. You talked about both of these guys already. So why is Hank? And he's talking about Senior. Why is Hank Williams such a legend, and why is he still relevant today? And my other friend said, "What are his thoughts on Prine?" But they all kind of also hit on this point together: is what do you think makes a good songwriter? What are the similarities? Because you've now seen all of these people that, you know, there's these heritages of Prine and Hank Sr. and all of this. But now you're also seeing glimpses, like you said, you knew it when you saw Tyler and you heard him. So what do you see as the connection of that country music lineage? And you can start wherever and meander through that however you want.
Well, when it comes to Hank Sr., I think that, you know, I think Prine and Towns, or excuse me, Hank and Towns, I don't think anybody else has been able to express heartbreak and sorrow and stuff that they felt as clearly and as deep and as relatable as maybe them two guys did it. And I think with Hank Sr., I mean, just I think that he was probably one of the most honest, just naturally gifted songwriters that's ever walked this earth. You know, like sometimes I'll sit and listen to some of the, you know, shit he writes, and I was listening to Almost Lonesome I Could Cry the other day, and it's talking about, you know, the silence of a falling star lights up a purple sky. And, you know, he's talking about, you know, probably laying out in the woods somewhere on his back or something and just seeing a shooting star go across the sky. But the way that he describes it, it just makes it so beautiful, you know, and it makes you think of things different than just somebody saying, you know, a shooting star going across the sky or whatever. And that's just, you know, it was just like going into that, he could take like heartbreak and he could describe it in a way that you didn't even realize that was, you know, you could be going through something and listen to the way that he described it. And it's almost like you were understanding it on a totally different level type deal. And I just think that, you know, somebody like him, you know, just, the way that he told stories and the songs that he wrote and recorded and stuff like that, I just think they're timeless, and it's just his music could be heard as long as there's folks walking around this earth, you know. And I think, you know, just like with, like talking about Tyler, you know, like Tyler on his first record, you know, he had on Bottles and Bibles, he had that song Play Me a Hank Song, and you know, you can tell that he went through that, you know. He was a teenager, probably, you know, went through a little bit of heartbreak, you know, a girl broke up with him or anything, you know, and he heard some Hank Sr. and it just really just kind of blew his mind type deal, you know. It was kind of like,
yeah, this for guy, sure.
What I'm feeling right now, nobody's ever explained it to me better than what he just sang about, you know. And it just, you know, I think you take, you know, you talk about the lineage of country music and stuff, the folks that still doing it and playing traditional country music and stuff, I just think that they're just trying to continue doing what, you know, I guess they're trying to show their own representation of the music they love type deal, and you know, the music that's meant so much to them. And I'm sure I'm sure people like, you know, like you take a Luke Bryan or something like that, or somebody like that. I remember somebody sent me a YouTube video one time of Luke Bryan, like at some talent show, like singing like Hank Sr. or something like that. I'm sure these cats that are really big, you know, country stars and stuff that make pretty music that ain't that great, you know, I often sit and think about what they listen to. And I bet a lot of them listen to the same stuff many of you listen to. But it's just, you know, somebody's paying them a lot of money to make something really shit.
And you know what? Good for them, right? Yeah. So they're doing their thing too.
I've never tried to, like, you know, I've told people over the years, and I've probably pissed a few people off, you know. You know, I've had people ask me, you know, well, want me to say something really negative about something or something like that. And I always say, you know, I try not, any time that I waste on something that I don't like, that's time that I'm wasting that I could be building or, you know, praising something I do like type deal. Mm. And I don't know, some of these people, I'm sure they're great people. Some of the, you know, I know like Luke Bryan, he adopted his niece and nephew after I think his sister or something like that got killed. So, I mean, you'd have to be a pretty halfway decent person, you know, to do something like that type deal, you know. But it just, he makes the music that he makes, I don't like. But, you know, a lot of these folks, you know, like I said, I sometimes sit and think about, you know, just kind of what they listen to. They probably don't listen to stuff too much different than what we do. It's just they're getting paid. That's kind of the path. They went down that path, and they're just, the music that they're recording is pretty bad. But, you know, it's just... But you take somebody like Tyler or Coder or something like that, they could probably, if Coder was, you know, you take a voice like his or Tyler's or whatever, if they was to start like recording really shitty music, they could be like some of the biggest names on the globe, you know, type deal. And, you know, it means so much to me that they still want to put music out there that means something to them, that, the folks are or that they're passionate about type deal, and they're representing the music that they've grew up on and stuff like that. But you take other people that they just kind of go to the dark side type deal, you know what I mean? They just kind of take that.
Yeah.
But you know, it just means so much to me that you do still have people that are passionate about what we do, and they are keeping the country music that a lot of us love and stuff that we grew up on, and it means so much to us that they are keeping that genre alive and things. You know, I hear people all the time talking about how country music dead, or, you know, how it needs saved. It's not dead, and it doesn't necessarily need saved. It just, it needs folks to be able to hear it type deal. You know, it just needs outlets to get it out there, because there's folks that when I first, you know, Tyler first played in my house, I put on Facebook, you know, Tyler Childers going to be here. Nobody came, not one soul other than who was playing music and who lived here at my house came. And if I was to do that now, you know, it'd be unreal type deal. But I think a lot of times folks don't really pay much attention to stuff until, you know, the radio or something does kind of pick up on it a little bit or something like that. So I would love for folks to sometimes maybe just go out and look a little bit outside their normal outlets or whatever to try to find stuff, because there is just so much good music out there. There's so much good music as there is today as there was 20 years ago. It's just, you know, you don't get to hear it as easy anymore.
Man, that is good stuff. Well, if people have loved this chat and they don't already listen to your stuff, they need to roll over and check it out. He's this much of a gem all the time. And, I think you get at it. You get that mutual sense of when I listen to your stuff, that I get that there is therapy in this for you and there is therapy in it for the listener. So I want to know where, as we kind of wrap things up, where do you want people and how do you want people to find the show? You've got your podcast as well as your new video show. Is there any other things you want to promote?
They can find they can listen to my podcast over at wbwalker.com. It's kind of slow because I'm not the best with websites and I just got stuff on there. The best way to listen to my podcast, if somebody does like have a phone, they can listen to it on the podcast app or Google Play or the Stitcher app. You just type in, you know, w.b.walker and it bring it up. But on the video show side of things, if you just go on YouTube and type in w.b.walker, it should bring it up. And I think I've, with the Coder show, that was the seventh show I've done so far, so folks can see all seven episodes there. But I'm on Instagram at Old Soul Radio Show. I'm pretty active and stuff on there. That's probably the social media that I fool with probably the most. I'm on Twitter at Old Soul Radio, facebook.com/Old Soul Radio Show. But my email is wb@wbwalker.com. I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, but I think that kind of covers the radio show and the.
So the last thing I just want to ask you is, why should people continue to make more music?
No, I think no matter what folks do, I think folks should do what's in their heart. You know, what makes them happy and the part of them they want to share with the world, or if they just want to share with just people in general. Because, you know, I think that we live in a world that's so negative. You know, like I was so scared that when I first started, because YouTube, to me, it seemed like so many trolls and shit like that, you know, commenting on videos and stuff. And like I was,
yeah.
And I don't let stuff bother me, but I don't like seeing that stuff. You know, I'm the kind of person, like I tell all my kids, I said, if you ain't got nothing good to say, don't say nothing at all type of deal. Because there's enough negativity in the world. They don't need your negative opinion too type of deal. But, you know, it just means so much to me that, that folks do like through music that folks get like, I'm definitely one of them. You know, people might think of me as a podcaster or as things go forward over the years, you know, they might think of me as a YouTuber or something like that. But, you know, first and foremost, I mean, 100% I'm a fan of music. And music has always been so good to me and been there for me when nobody else was, you know. Growing up, my mom and dad, you know, I remember when they went through their divorce and stuff like that, I can just remember times just putting headphones in and just kind of drifting away and just trying to let you forgetting about what you're going through or whatever. And I still do that to this day. If I have a real shitty day, I'll put a record on, and more times than not, you know, it saves me type deal at that point in time. You know, it just gets me out of this bad place or shitty mood or whatever. And just, you know, it helps so much. So, you know, just if music means that much to me, I know I'm not alone. I know there's folks all over the world that feel the same way. So, you know, I think music is kind of the universal language. I get emails sometimes from people that I have to use Google Translator to read them. I mean, because it's a different language.
That's awesome.
A different language or something, you know. And I just wonder sometimes, you know, if some folks even understand, you know, in different countries and stuff across the world, they even understand fully the lyrics and stuff from these songs, but something's speaking to them, you know, and something is meaning something to them and things like that. So, you know, just, I think music is kind of the universal language. It can help people and unite people in ways that nothing else hardly can. And I might be biased, you know, when I say that because of how much music means to me, but all I can really speak on is, you know, what I feel type deal. And music has meant so much to me that I just couldn't imagine a world without it, you know. And I'm just so thankful for the time and effort and the passion and the sincerity and the honesty and just the life experiences, just everything in general that folks put into songs and put them out there in the world, you know, because they just mean so much to me.
Well, WB, this time has been awesome. I'd keep you on here all night long, but we both got families we got to get after at some point. So thanks again. Love your perspective. Glad to have you, man. Appreciate it a lot.
Yep. I apologize if I get kind of wordy sometimes, but like, you know, Coulter, when he put WB talking on there, I didn't know what he was going to call it or whatever. I had no clue. But I mean, that's one thing I can say, you know. When it comes to stuff I'm passionate about, stuff I love, I could sit and talk, you know. I really got to go in deep. And a lot of times I still, like you talk about me talking slow on my, you know, just in general. But a lot of times it's just me trying to the best I can to express what's in my mind. And I just put so much thought into what I say type deal. And, you know, like I listen back to some of my podcasts and stuff when I'm editing. I'm like, and I have to go in and cut some pauses and stuff out because I just pause too long type deal.
I feel you. I feel you hardcore.
That's how I am sometimes. But like, I put so much thought into what I say because I don't want to come off as not being genuine. I try my best to express exactly what I feel in my heart with everything I say. Mm-hmm. And I hope that folks can kind of pick up on that sometimes.
I think they absolutely do, man. So for me, for Chris, and for WB, everybody remember, give more grace, share more love, and make more music.
Right.
All right. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, if you enjoyed and want to learn more about the guests, their info is in the show notes, as well as how you can support the show. And the best way is to leave a rating and review and tell a friend. Anything else, if you want to make a donation, buy some merch, follow us on Instagram, get in touch with me. You can all do that through the links in the show notes. But until next time, give more grace, share more love, and make more music.